something be something. We better get into the message tonight. I'm afraid it might be long. I'd like to preach to the youth, and I have a real burden. The rest of you may listen in. I invite you to Genesis. I started with a burden a few weeks ago. I had a situation where a young person came and asked if there was any way that I could share what our expectations would be for a venture that they were about to go into. And I could tell that they were looking for a blessing. And immediately it made me think about this incident here in Genesis, where we find this in chapter 27, where Esau came to his father and cried, just bless me, even me also, oh my father, and the passion that's in this. And then I said, well, you know, I believe, Lord, you want me to preach on that. And then I started reading this, and the more I read about, the more unfair it seemed to Esau. It just was so unfair that I'm like, how can I preach a message telling young people how to get the blessing from their parents when they might have unfair situations as well? But the more I looked at Esau's life, the more I realized by reading Hebrews chapter 12, and then it threw me back to some of the earlier passages, that Esau wasn't so much a victim of circumstances as he was already reaping for what he had sowed along the way. So tonight, I am going to make some alterations to my original title, and I will say, Youth Receiving Blessing from Godly Forebears. Because there's a possibility tonight that you have parents that you don't know how to ask a blessing from, because their lives aren't blessed. And while we all want to do everything we can for restoring relationships, yet I do realize that there's a possibility that someone here might need to say, I need to pick a different parent or somebody different, or maybe you're adopted and you don't know who your biological parents are. I would say that this, if you can go to your father and say, I want a blessing from you, then thank the Lord for that. But if you can't go to an earthly father, you can still pick another father and say, I want my life to be under your blessing, because you understand the path better than I do. And I remember that. I remember going to see my grandmother and unexpectedly having her ask me to come to her bedside and kneel beside her bed. And she said, I want to put my hands on you and give you a blessing, but I have some testimony about your Christian life first. That's what she asked me. And I didn't remember this, but one of my sons told me recently that I told him, he was single and kind of didn't know what was going to happen in life, and I said, you know what? My father's still living. Why don't you go see if he will give you a blessing? And he said, I went and I told him what you said, and he said, come and kneel by my bedside. And he died soon after that as well. My father died and gave a blessing to my son. But this is something that's happened in our family, that each time someone left for getting married or maybe a life vocation, they would like to come and have a blessing. And we would write up something special and it was usually our family worship time, but we'd call the family that was there and anybody who lived close by and wanted to be in the service and lay on hands and have a special blessing for them. And tonight, I'd just like you to think about the wonderful privilege to have a godly older generation lay hands on you and say, we can put our blessing on you. I think about that with every wedding. We've had weddings where young people came and they wanted to get married and you really couldn't put your blessing on it and you hardly know what to do. And there's other young people who earn their blessing, so to speak. And you feel like, well, words are not adequate to say what I'd like to give this young person or this young couple. I think about that so often before a baptism and before a wedding. What am I going to say? What am I going to ask God to pour out on their life? And this is a very sacred moment as you're kneeling before the Lord on knees. You've just made a vow. And you receive a blessing for life with that. Baptism, weddings, or ordinations. But let's start reading Genesis 27. That's tomorrow night. Genesis 27, verse 1. It came to pass that when Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau his eldest son and said unto him, My son. And he said unto him, Behold, here am I. And he said, Behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver, and thy bow, and go out to the field, and take me some venison. And make me savory meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. You know the story. She told Jacob, they quick got some kids, they took care of the meat, they took that quickly, and he put the hair on his arms, and he came in, and his voice was the wrong voice. But they fooled Isaac, and Isaac laid hands on Jacob, and he gave him the blessing. And the blessing was this. He says, verse 28, Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven, and the fatness of the earth, and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. Well, I wasn't going to read those verses, but I just like that blessing. Wouldn't you like that from somebody who was responsible for you? Verse 30. And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And he also made unsavory meat, and brought it to his father, and said unto his father, Let my father arise, and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac his father said unto him, Who art thou? And he said, I'm thy son, thy firstborn Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly, and said, Who? Where is he that hath taken venison, and brought it to me, and I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him? Yea, and he shall be blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry, and said unto his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, Thy brother came with subtlety, and hath taken away thy blessing. And Esau said, Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. And he said, Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, Behold, I have made him thy lord, and all his servants have I given, brethren have I given to him for servants. And with corn and wine have I sustained him, and what shall I do now unto thee, my son? And Esau said unto his father, Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Esau his and Isaac his father answering said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth, and of the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt break the dominion, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews helped me realize I did want to preach on this, because Hebrew gives us some insight into what was going on, and I found plenty of other things in my study of Genesis as I went back and looked at this passage again. Follow peace with all men, verse 14 says, beginning of the sentence, but let's start with verse 15, Hebrews 12:15. Looking diligently lest any man fail of the grace of God. I don't know if bitterness starts first or cutting off the grace of God starts first, but they go hand in hand. Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. You know what? It might have been his bitterness against Jacob and his mom that troubled Esau and cut off God's grace, or it might have been that he had cut off God's grace by the way he was living. And so bitterness is a natural result. If you don't have God's grace flowing into your life every day, you're just going to get as bitter as you can be. That's just the way it is. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. See that? The rejection of the blessing is tied into the fact that he sold his birthright. We'll look at Romans a little bit and that passage that says that he couldn't get it because God hated him, and I think we'll understand an answer for that. For he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. I'm going to stop reading there because he switches the subject. But I'd like to just highlight a few of the things that happened in Esau's life and turn them around and tell you youth, or plead with you youth, to consider these points so that you can have the blessing of a spiritual forebears as they come and work with you in your life. Number one comes from Genesis 25. In Genesis 25, at the end of the chapter, we have the very first incident after these boys had grown up. Now, Isaac was 60 when he had these boys, okay? And he was 100 at the end of verse 26 of chapter 26, because Esau was 40. So if you add 40 and 60 together, you get 100, right? So somewhere in this chapter, Isaac goes from 60 to 100. And these boys go from 0 to 40. I don't know where that is, just to give you some idea. Oh, and by the way, Jacob was 77 when he went to get a wife. You know that? Ripe young age. You boys don't need to get in a hurry, okay? Plenty of time. He was 77 when he went down there to get married. Went through Bethel. Let's go to verse 29. I don't know if these boys were 20 or 30 or 40. And Jacob sowed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with the same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die. And what profit shall this birthright do to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he sware unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Number one, learn to tell yourself no to your impulses. Young people, was he telling himself the truth when he said, "I am about to die"? I doubt it. I really don't think that Esau was in nearly as bad a shape as he was telling himself that he was. But I know that's the tendency of youth. Well, not just youth. All of us. We get some whim. We really need something. And we got to have that truck, or we got to have this. We got to have some food, or you put it down. And we are determined, even if we might say that, well, you know what? I really don't have to have it. But telling ourselves the truth about our wants. The Bible says that young men should be sober-minded. And the word sober-minded is sophroneo. And sophroneo means having disciplined thinking. And telling yourself no starts in your own mind. Make yourself boundaries. This is right, and off on this side and over this side is wrong. And I'm not going to go over there. And I am not going into forbidden territory. What happens is young people give themselves permission to go to extremes because they feel bad. And so they go over there, and the next thing they even feel worse. The more you travel in the ditches, and I want to tell you something, Virginia's great as an illustration of that. All you have to do is get your wheels off the highway, and you're in the ditch, and it looks to me like trouble. It'd be a little nicer if there'd be a little more shoulder, but it's a good illustration of how you need to live your life. Don't give yourself a lot of permission to go off the edge. Just because you want it doesn't mean you have to have it. Your parents have been trying to give you internal controls from the time when you were a two-year-old walking around and you wanted to pull everything off the bookshelf. And they tried to tell you no, and you didn't want to be told no. When they swatted your bottom, you cried and acted like it was the end of the world, and Esau was still acting that way. Well, the fact of the matter is most of our impulses and internal compulsions hardly ever please God. Slow down. Think it through. Is this really something that's in God's plan for my life? Number two. The second thing I take from this passage, if you want the blessing of your forebears, godly forebears, value and esteem your spiritual heritage, your birthright. You know, in the passion of youth, sometimes it seems like a heritage of godliness is of little value. It might even seem like it's in the way. I know when I was growing up and I looked at the older people, I tested them in my mind. You know, was this really what the Bible wanted, what God wanted, or wasn't it? And, you know, for Esau, I want to be careful how I introduce this, but for Esau, what he gave up when he sold his birthright, but God had already said he wouldn't have it. But what he gave up was his privilege to be the ancestor of the Messiah. That's what he gave up. Now, one generation later, there was 12 boys to share it between, and only one could be the ancestor of the Messiah. But the other 11 still worked with him and became the people of God. And I believe it's the same way with Esau. Just because he couldn't be the ancestor of Jesus didn't mean, and the gifts and calling of God are without repentance, didn't mean he couldn't have been of the people of God. But he got so bent out of shape over this, and I'm about to get into the next point that I don't want to. I want to stay here with this. Value and esteem your birthright, your heritage. Now, for you, you cannot be the ancestor of the Messiah. Your birthright is the privilege to be a part of the people of God. This is something that there are people who wish they could have. They'd pay a great price for if I would have just been raised in a home and taught the Bible and shown how to live it. And yet there's so many of us who, because of divided loyalties, are ready to give that up. I want to just do a little illustration here on the board. I know tonight that our heritage is multifaceted. It's like a pie, and I'm going to draw pieces. Let's see, I don't want to get too many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's probably more than five. 1, 2, 3, 4. Is that five? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. I thought of at least, okay, the doctrine of salvation. This is part of the pie, and you hear messages about that. You also hear messages on non-resistance. Let's have one of these plain dress. Let's have one of these Bible ordinances. And let's have one of them future events, doctrine of the future. And these are all part of our faith. Which one of those can you take out and it's still Bible gospel? Which ones can you take out? I probably could have had some more. The one that often comes under fire first is this plain dress. Because, oh, well, you know, why do we need to do that? But I want to tell you something. Every generation that has pulled out the non-ornamentation of attire and done away with the fact that dress is part of our gospel ends up with everything else draining out of the pie too. I don't know why that is. The bishop who baptized me, I went to his viewing not very long ago, and there only one lady in that whole group had something that could be called a covering on. The rest of them, you wouldn't have known that it was, and yet all of them were whenever they were young, at least all of the ones that I knew of, his children that were about my age and all of that. It was amazing to see how much that has changed. We make applications, and our church has had the courage to say, if you want to live by the Bible, you need to do this. And I respect that. Now, you might look at your church and say, huh, they've got a lot of fault with them. That's really not, you know, not worth saving. And you're going to be the loser if you are, if you say that. You're going to be the loser in the end. I am not one of those who says that plain dress is the whole pie. You know what I'm saying? It seems like some folks in some places, it's all about plain dress all the time. or something similar to that. But I do believe that it's part of what the gospel has for us. And so be very careful that you don't sell out your birthright. That's part of what I would like to say. Now, let's go to point number 3. Turn a page or so and come to the end of chapter 26. And Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bathshemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mine unto Isaac and to Rebekah. The third point that I'd like to emphasize this evening is beware the snare of impurity and immoral living. Beware the snare of impurity and immoral living. Too many youth have not been warned. And I just want to write a little bit of a path of how this goes, or how it can go. And I want to talk a little frankly about what happens when young people don't know. And I don't know how did Esau end up with an ungodly Canaanite wife, a Hittite pagan for a wife. How did he do that when he was taught about God? It's one thing if you're taught about God, but you know, if you're not warned about the dangers of impurity. You think he just went down one day and got one and got married? I don't think so. I think he experimented, he got involved in stuff he shouldn't have, and eventually it seemed like the only right thing to do was get married. That's what I think happened, and it was a grief of mine. Let's talk about this. I want to start with ignorance. He probably didn't know what was going on as he was developing physically, and he began to develop some interest in the opposite sex. And because of this, someday he experienced a temptation. Now the temptation may come in many forms, all forms of immorality. He experienced a temptation. Possibly it was some kind of self-experimentation, self-pleasuring. Maybe it was fornication. Maybe it was pornography. They had it back then too. Maybe it was explicit music. Maybe it was something, who knows what it was. But he found the temptation. So far, that's pretty normal. But somebody should have told him, Esau, when this happens to you, run like crazy. Get out of there. But he didn't. I don't know if nobody told him, but he began to fantasize. And as he fantasized, the pleasures grew, an opportunity came along, and he yielded. I don't know for sure that he got messed up in his personal life before he got married. But 99% of the time, that's what happens. Deep down inside, something is going wrong before you run off and marry a Hittite woman. Now, of course, yielding gives pleasure. There is the pleasure of sin. And it felt good. It was thrilling. It gave him some kind of satisfaction. And after pleasure comes shame. And so he experienced this shame. It was probably in something small. He did it, you know. But it was a shame that he felt, and with shame comes hiding. And with hiding comes a real problem. When we hide sin, if it's too shameful to confess, it will be too enslaving to escape. If it's too shameful to confess, it will be too powerful for you to break out by yourself. That's the way it works. And it probably happened that way for him. He resolved never to do it again. I'm running out of room, so I'll just stop there. But guess what? He became restless. And the second time around, it was not ignorance anymore. That's the way this bondage worked. The second time around, it's not ignorance. He started wanting it, and he didn't feel satisfied until he went and exposed himself to the temptation again, and the fantasies built, and he yielded, and he came into pleasure, and this time the shame was even worse. And about third or fourth or tenth or 20th or 100th time around, he was stuck, and he had no way out unless he would have been ready to bring it to light. I don't know what else you could name here, but it is binding as to the long-term consequences. He felt like he did not deserve a good, godly woman. And the next thing that happened, he had a terrible loss of spiritual and mental energy because his life was being wrapped up in going around this thing again. And let me tell you something. If you'd have caught him one time when he was right here or when he's determined, I'll never do this thing again, that's just as much as being stuck in the circle as if you're right here. You know what I'm saying? Okay, you say, well, that never was my life. I guess there's another circle that I could talk about because he got into this one too. Let's just take all this out, shall we? You've got it in your mind. And here he is because he hasn't been treated right. Let's just kind of slip these out and see if we can fill this in with something else. He wasn't treated right, and so he had self-pity. Nothing hurts to feel sorry for yourself, does it? If you feel a little sorry for yourself because things are not working out quite right, well, you know what goes along with self-pity? Depression. And after depression, he had some low burn anger. Sure you do. If you feel sorry for yourself and stuff's not working out and you never get the chance as everybody else come, Mom was against me, I can't even get a blessing. Low burn anger turns into an explosion one day. Right? Can you run on low burn anger without having an explosion? And you say, well, I'll just never have an explosion again. I want to tell you something. If you just deal with the explosions, but you don't get rid of this, and you don't get rid of this, and you don't get rid of this, you're not going to get out of this. It's going to happen again. And you can make up your mind, I'm never going to be angry again. I'm talking about a spirit sin now. We all know that the Bible says that those who commit adultery will not inherit the kingdom of God. But do you know the Bible also says that revilers do not inherit the kingdom of God? Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And check it out. Reviler is somebody who will give you a piece of his mind and tear you out. That's exactly what it is. Revilers will not inherit the kingdom of God. This cycle, this spirit sin of anger, is a sin unto death just like the rest is. Well, and so you feel guilty after the explosion. And so what do? You do a patch-up. You try to act like it didn't happen. You go around and do the dishes for your wife instead of laying on the couch, you're trying to make it up by doing nice things, but you won't own up, you just patch up, and you defend yourself in your own mind. Can you even read this? Sorry, it looks so bad. Defend self in your own mind, and you resolve, I should have left this one in, I'll never do that again. But it isn't long until you're feeling the old self-pity again. You see what a mess that is? That was Esau's life. How are you going to get a blessing when you got a life of immorality, the one I drew before, or a life of self-pity that's all wrapped up around yourself? How are you going to get a blessing? And I want to talk to you young people tonight. These things are real. Both of these that I drew up here tonight are real traps that adults fall into, and they can't get out again unless they are willing to do the hard work. And you know what the hard work is? Humble self, be transparent, say sorry. I believe that's the hardest thing in the world. I remember a man that we were working with one time, and he grew up talking Dutch, and we were trying to get him to say sorry to his children, and his wife, He says, well, I don't know how to say those kind of things in English. And his wife said, what he's trying to say is that he doesn't like to say sorry. She hit the nail on the head. Well, I don't think he felt very good about it, but I had kind of come to the same conclusion. Can I beg with you young people, especially this life of immorality? You know, it was a grief of mine to Isaac and Rebekah. How in the world was Isaac going to lay hands on his son and say he was going to bless him? When he knew that there were things wrong that were making him go a course away from the people of God. I know it's a very subtle thing, but you really think about it. Is there hidden things in your life, hidden pattern, or is there an anger pattern in there that's taking you away from the blessing of God? Number four, the fourth thing that I emphasize, like to highlight tonight, if you want to have the blessing, is you're going to have to learn to forgive the mistakes and injustices of other people. I am terribly embarrassed about Genesis chapter 27. When Mama goes and runs and finds Jacob and teaches him how to deceive his dad. And I can believe that if I would have been Esau, it would have done more than just make me mad. It doesn't seem right. But I want to dig into this a little more. Number one, two wrongs never make a right. Just because Mom did wrong doesn't mean it's all right for you to do wrong. We have to learn to forgive the mistakes. No, it wasn't just a mistake. The injustice, the wrong of the righteous. But number two, stop and think about the dynamics of why she acted that way. I want you to come back with me to Genesis chapter 25. Because, you know, I want you to just notice that Rebecca wasn't born yesterday. In fact, she was the mama. And in verse 21, I'll skip that. Verse 22, and the children struggled together, talking about Esau and Jacob. Struggled together within her, and she said, if it be so, why am I thus? What's going on? What is going on inside of me between these two babies? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. She had a revelation from God that Jacob was to be the one on top and Esau was to be the one that would serve him. And whenever they were born, and they says how the order they were born and all of that, from the very beginning, Rebecca knew which one would get the blessing. Now, didn't she tell Isaac? I don't know what happened. But you know, we don't always understand the dynamics in the home. There's some homes, you just don't talk. You don't talk. And maybe Rebecca knew that she couldn't tell Pop because that wouldn't work. I don't know. But deep down inside, she said she knew it was supposed to be Jacob that got the blessing. So somehow she had to manipulate that. I want to tell you something. If you can't talk, you'll go to manipulating. And if you go to manipulating, somebody's going to get hurt. Not just somebody, everybody's going to get hurt when you go to manipulating. Some homes seem to have that motto, don't talk, don't trust, don't feel, don't have emotions, and don't make mistakes. And the tension in that home is going to produce children who have extra struggles to deal with. But one thing that we know, even here unto are ye called. We read it last night in 2 Peter. You're born in a situation of tension. It's because God is calling you to that. I remember a friend of mine, I'll just say this. A friend of mine had a real journey with depression. His father tried to kill himself. And he heard the shot. And the father lingered a few days and then he died. And the young man blamed himself. And he wondered why a father who didn't hug him and show him love But the father was doing that. He was wallowing in his thing. And he didn't even notice his son had any hurts or feelings, okay? How was he going to do that? So the son grew up, and he felt like he wasn't worth anything, and he probably caused the frustration. He probably caused his dad to die. You know, he went down that guilt trip, and he finally tried to take his life. It was a sad story. And I've talked with him, and I worked with him. I was close with him, and he just went a terrible road, all kinds of. It was a terrible, terrible road. And after a while, he found his way through it. He leveled out. He got to be happy. Got to relate to him. And I finally went to him one day. I said, you know, are you on some medication or what's going on? He said, nope. He said, something changed. I said, what changed? He said, well, he said, the counselor I was talking to one day finally got through to me. I said, what did he say? He said, and I won't say his name. He said, so you think you know better than God which home you should have been born into? And I was like, he said, I was like, you know what? That's the way I'm acting. I'm resenting my father. I'm thinking I should have had a good home where somebody loved me. And God knew that I needed to be born in this kind of home to make me compassionate to other people who have that kind of situation too. And I laid it all down. And he said, I'm going away from that. I'm never going back. And he hasn't. He has never repeated that whole path. It's a path that you choose to walk, or you choose to let behind. You choose to let it alone. Forgive the mistakes and injustices of the people who influenced your life, or you'll never get to the place where you can have a blessing. And then you'll have a double curse. You'll have the curse of example, and you'll have the curse of choosing the same frustrated way of living yourself. One of the things somebody told me lately, I was sharing on how to get deliverance from an old life, from a life like that. And they said, make sure you emphasize that unless you forgive and release the person, you'll never find the power to do anything but repeat the whole thing all over again yourself. Number five, accept your spot in God's plan and do all you can do to make his revealed will work. Turn to Romans. This is a real puzzle for me. I forgot to write the reference down, but it's over here in chapter 9 or 11. Right here in chapter 9. And I read this verse, and I couldn't figure out why in the world. Many, many years ago, Brother Aaron explained it to me. And it came together, and it made so much sense. I'm just going to talk about it now. He's talking about the fathers and the fact that they were receiving the adoption. Verse 10, and not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. It was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. And then he talks to Moses, but then he comes back to the same illustration. Verse 16, so then it is not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy. What is God talking about? Brother Aaron told me he's talking about the spot that you fill in life. He is not talking about whether you're saved or lost. Oh, Pharaoh's spot in life, not whether he would be saved or lost. Esau, no matter how much father wanted Esau to be the blessed one, he willed it. And he told me that verse 16 is plainly Isaac. So it is not of him that willeth, Isaac, nor of him that runneth, Esau. Esau ran as fast as he could to go get that, kill that deer and make that venison, but on God that showeth mercy. God had already decreed that Jacob would be the one who was a progenitor of Jesus Christ. He would be the father of the nation, and anybody else would serve him. Oh, guess what? God has probably decided that you will never be the president of the United States of America. Oh, thank God. Isn't that wonderful? Ah, what a load off my mind. But there are a couple people out there who determined that they're willing it and they're going to run it, right? They're going to get it. But God's already picked one. He knows who it's going to be. The gifts and the calling of God. You can never be a master piano player or whatever it is you want to be. Accept it. You say, well, if I work hard enough, I can be the best. All this stuff that has come through in that self-esteem and that jargon about praise your children into being somebody great, a bunch of baloney. They're just common, ordinary people who can just do the best they can. Think of the story of Jonathan. God willed it one day that Jonathan would not be the next king. David was going to be the next king. What did Jonathan decide? I will be next unto you. I will help you. I'll make you the best king Israel ever had. I'll give you my bow. I'll give you my sword. I'll give you everything. I'll give you my robe. I'll call you king now. And we all look at Jonathan and admire him. If God calls you to play second fiddle, accept it and help the person who's called to be first fiddle. I don't know if there is such a thing, but you know, if you can't be the deacon, then make the deacon's job the best you can. There are some people, because they didn't get a slot, they resent it the rest of their life. And that was Esau. He resented it. You can't get a blessing from God if you can't accept his calling for you. And you say, well, I never wanted to be single the rest of my life, or I never wanted to be, and poor me, and start in this circle if you want to. Go ahead, get in that circle and have a miserable life. No, don't. Please don't choose that way. You will never have a path of blessing if you do that. Well, I had another one yet. Turn to Proverbs 23. We'll keep it short. One of my favorite Proverbs, in thinking about how to get a blessing from the earlier generation. In Proverbs 23, is either mom or dad, whoever it was, had their young person there and just pouring out their heart to them and said, you know what, I just really, really want to bless you, and I'm giving you some advice. And so they end up with verse 26, my son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my way. Let's be really, really close. And I would say that for you, if you want your parents' blessing, go to them before you do any project and ask for advice. You say, well, I can't talk to my dad, he's always mad. Then find your spiritual father before you court, before you buy a car, whatever it is. Sit down and say, what shall I do about this issue? But verse 26 is built on verse 19. Verse 19 talks about your heart. It says, hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in the way. In other words, you're responsible for your impulses. Back to point number one again. And guide your heart in a way, the things you love. And then in verse 17, verse 19 is built on verse 17. Let not thine heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of the Lord. And verse 17, I think, is built on verse 15. My son, if thy heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. Tonight, decide, I'm going to have a wise heart. I am going to have a heart that does not envy the sinners. I know I could get stuff on my computer, or I know that I could get stuff from the library. I know that I could go after this. I got enough money, I could go after this kind of truck, or I could do this kind of thing. Don't envy sinners. Let them run their life. Say, God, what do you want me to do with my life for you? And then guide your heart. Do I really want to chase after that kind of thing? Do I want to develop an affection for moral failure where I have to hide stuff in my life all the time? Do I want to be a person who's deceitful? When am I going to stop? How big are my secrets going to be until I start confessing them? Why not do it when they're little? You know, do you want a life pattern of deception? But you know, you can't really give your heart to your parents until you're ready to choose to be wise, to not envy sinners, and to make sure you're going to guide your heart in the things that you love. And then you can go and be transparent and become right back again to the point that I made here. Humility, humble yourself, and be transparent and say sorry. And deal with your things and keep them current. Another thing that I find just about have to do is as I look down the road and anticipate when I might face temptations, my wife is my accountability agent. She's accountable to me. We have to talk about the things. We were talking about that today. Victory over this anger pattern and the agreement that we had, we finally came to the place where we said, you know what? If we show anger to our children or to each other, we're going to have to go back and acknowledge it and say sorry. We're going to have to do that. And that pattern was broken. I believe tonight in Christian victory. I believe that there are sins that people do, even people who wear plain clothes, that send them to hell. Reviling, adultery, and so forth. Look them up in 1 Corinthians 6. But I also believe that there are people who find Christian victory, walk in humility, and find their way to heaven. I've looked beyond the shadows of the lowland. Where do you want to be when life is over? That's a decision we need to make. I think we're going to sing an invitation hymn tonight.